Welcome to Help from Future Self.
Hello, Archons. Welcome to Help from Future Self, the conversational KeyForge podcast by and for KeyForge friends. I'm your host, Sydney, and I am joined by one of my best KeyForge friends this week, Blake. Hey, Blake, how you doing?
Hey, Sydney. I'm doing fantastic. It's a great week. I've been getting to play KeyForge more than usual, so that's always fun. I guess that's a product of being in an ABR league, right?
Totally. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, especially with Triad having been this week. I played a lot of Triad games in practice.
Oh, I didn't practice at all, which is maybe my downfall. I just played though. I mean, I did lose. And shout out to Zoke for having an incredible beatdown on me, I would say. But I got to play my Vault Master 23 deck that I got in Vegas, which I actually really love. The deck is something that I'm really into, and I just practiced that essentially. And so getting to see the levels that deck can perform was really exciting for me and made the whole week worth it, even if I did lose, just getting to have that discovery.
Oh, that's awesome.
Discovery, right? We're supposed to discovery a lot on this podcast, isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's so cool. I didn't actually put as much thought into like the three decks that I was picking as much as like how much I practice them, because a lot of people, they thought about, do I need artifact control? Should these decks be similar so that the person has a hard time choosing, or so that I have a something to aim at when I ban my opponent's deck? And I was just like, all right, well, I need three decks from three different sets. I got this. Like, let's see what's out there and just practice them till I'm good enough at them to play.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Triad, but I haven't played in a long time. Like probably like two or three sets have come out since I last played like proper Triad. And I always go for the theme. So like you can't decide really what's the difference. So my theme was Brobnar in all of them with a key cheat in every deck. That was how I rolled, is they all had to have Brobnar. So they're going to be big boards. And then I wanted a key cheat in every deck. And that was my philosophy. And I honestly liked my choices. Even though I lost poorly, I still think I made a great solid deck choice. I think I may have gone about my execution. I could have maybe made a different choice that would have been more advantageous. Don't know if I'd have won, but I think it would have been more advantageous in the matchup.
Sure. Well, there's always next week for ABR.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, today, unlike what we've been talking about for the past 3 minutes, we are going to be talking about a spoiler. We have a spoiler from Ghost Galaxy. They were kind enough to honor us with another spoiler after they so infamously spoiled one of our spoilers last week.
Yes. The truth is they realized that there was three of us on the cast and we only had two cards, which meant only two people get to talk about this. And they were like, oh, we need to give a third card for someone like Blake to talk about. So that's really what it is. We're just favorites, I guess. What can I say? No.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there was a bit of a mix-up where our card ended up in the article, like literally the day before we were about to talk about it. So I think the timing got a little bit mixed up there within the hullabaloo of it being the final day of GameFound and wanting to release information about each of the houses. So we, in fact, got a replacement card, which we are getting to bring to you in a exclusive solo episode this week, which is kind of nice considering that everything's died down with all the hype and we get to really just enjoy this moment with this card, which I got to say, when I look at the card, it's stunning, like right off the top. Its artwork is very, very detailed, and it's got a character on it that really pulls you in. So the card we have today comes also from Logos, and it is called Articulated Wren. It is a 3-powered cyborg scientist creature with hazardous 1, and it says, at the end of your turn, you may exhaust a friendly creature. If you do, draw a card, and it's a common. Like, seriously, great card. If you can pretty much decide you're not going into a certain house next turn, that means you get an extra draw at the end of your turn every time this happens. Because it's common, you could probably get this in multiples, which means you could get card advantage in a really significant way. So Yeah, I don't want to go into any more further details because I have way more thoughts about this card, but I want to just give this to Sydney now. To what's your first impression with this card?
I also love this card because a lot of the Logos benefits that happen at the end of the turn or at the beginning of the turn, they have like stipulations. They have things that are actually harder to meet, like discarding a card to get an amber, or it has to be not on a flank or on a flank. Things that your opponent may have control over, where in this case, like you said, if you know you're not going into another house, this is a fantastic card to have. But on top of that, too, with the amount of boards that we've been seeing from honestly, Winds of Exchange on, this has been something where you usually have creatures of another house available to you out there. And having Hazardous One is just like the cherry on top, because that means that it has a way to kill full power creatures. And if four power creatures were to try and get it off the board, they are sacrificing themselves. So I do think that this has a lot of sticking power, more so than some of the other Logos cards that are stuck at 1, 2, or 3 power.
Yes. Is end of the turn, do you ready at the end of your turn?
So
this
no,
would be the last thing you do, right?
Yeah, this would happen after you ready. So just like things that happen at the start.
So that means everything's ready. That means you could technically exhaust it to draw the card.
I would, you know what? That's totally true. I never even thought of that. You could be going into a different house next turn. That's a great point.
So the thing I thought about this, which is really interesting, is especially if you have multiples, what you could do, and I assume there's going to be multiple since it's common. I think this will be something you'll see, and people will want this card, I think, for the card advantage that it's going to provide. But what if you did a psychological thing with your opponent where you choose to essentially exhaust one house? So you're basically saying, I'm not calling this house next turn. And then you're making your opponent decide, okay, now do I attack your other creatures because you've just switched the composition of the board plus hand delta by eliminating some of your own creatures that you can utilize next turn.
That's so a great mind game.
There's a cool psychological aspect that this card could bring, where you're presenting something to your opponent that they have to consider, like how do they want to combat maybe you eliminating part of your board.
I also think that was something I thought. This is something you said really, really rung true with me, because like this is kind of like it can be an insular effect, like as good as an artifact sitting on your board, because like you said, at the end of your turn you may exhaust a friendly creature. So because it's at the end, and it can even be itself because it has readied at the end of your turn, then you can basically just do it to itself every turn like you had never played it. And so you're just drawing an extra card. And one of the things that makes this great is it's just like any other artifact or effect that gives you an extra card. So you're going into your turn with 7 cards and your opponent isn't. And that's a really cool feature of this. If you have 2 or 3 of them, you really never need to call Logos to make this work because it's a status effect.
Yep, it's true. That's the cool thing. I do like it. And I will say that Hazardous One, like maybe you think whatever Hazardous One, but the truth is Hazardous One is actually powerful. And there's the card, I don't remember the name of it, off the top of my head, but it started off in, like, it was in Mass Mutations. It had Taunt and it had Hazardous One, and it was also in Logos. And I found that it was very helpful. And it's just having a card with Hazardous, it means that anything with 1 power can't go after it. If there's, you just have a little bit of damage. It means if you have 1 armor, it's negated. It means that 4 power now will get destroyed. It obviously doesn't do anything for the matchup 3-on-3, but it's still just a really interesting aspect of the game. Like, I think Hazardous is one of the most interesting mechanics that we have within the game.
And I also think too, because a lot of the power creep, as in the increasing power level of each card, like a lot of the houses like Brobnar, we've seen the average power level of those cards go up. And I think that can happen in Logos as well, but using Hazardous to do it is kind of keeping to their theme of being these small itty bitty robots, you know, the small creatures that do really cool things, but they are smaller in power. Well, giving it Hazardous gives it that little bit of power creep that some of the other houses have been seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Is there anything else about this card that's really stood out to you, aside from the stunning art, which you can see in our Discord channel? When this episode was published, this card is in our Discord for everyone to peruse as we discuss.
I just really like that it complements some of the other cards we've also seen, because the fact that this card could also have an upgrade to it that is from a different house means that if you're playing this from multiple different houses, then you're getting it out there faster. You also, exhausting this is an even bigger mind game, or exhausting a creature where it's one of the only ones on the board of that house. You know, I like the mind game aspect. I like the fact that you need to think about what you're going to do because it'll affect your next turn, but also that it's possible as long as you have any creatures on the board. Whereas if this is on the board, you have a creature on the board, you're drawing an extra card.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I completely agree with everything you just said. I'm excited to see this card in multiples for sure. By itself is cool, but I think this card, people are going to want to have potentially three of them. I don't think you want more than three. Two is probably going to be really nice getting to have, because it's pretty vanilla on the board. Like, it's not doing it. There's no reap effects or anything like that, but it is creating a efficiency boost for you, which is really cool to see. So I think this will be easy to code into DOK as well, which is nice. So it'll be easy work for them, just efficiency boost. And then board, I guess, situation down a little bit. I don't know how they calculate that. I don't deal with DOK. Too bad we don't have June here. She could speak on that a little bit better. But I'm really excited about this card being in Ember Skies. I'm honestly really excited about Ember Skies. I think it's going to be a favorite set for me, just from all the things. I'm not sure how powerful the set's going to be, but I think it's going to have a really great play experience behind it, which is what I'm most excited for, because following GR is going to be hard. Like, anything is going to feel like a step down from GR, because I don't think they can go up from GR. They need to pull back a little bit.
Totally.
Just from how powerful this set is, right?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was thinking, like, to follow GR, they needed to release three sets, like, to make people awesomely excited for, like, that we have Amber Skies, and then we have Tokens of Change, and then we have MMM coming out. So, like, there's stuff to get excited about, because GR was so awesome.
Yes, and in relation to that, I want to have just a little discussion about life without Logos, since we've had two Logos spoilers, and Logos has definitely been probably the most popular house, I would say, since the inception of the game. If you look at Coda, all the top decks usually ran Logos. If you look at AOA, even to this day, Logos is such an important part of, like, alliance pods using AOA, even just regular Archon people using AOA, they want that for the archiving and efficiency it brings. And then, of course, with Worlds Collide, we had EDI being introduced and everything that went along with that, and Logos still stayed at the top. Then we moved to mass mutation. And what do we have there? We have Auto Encoder comes out, plus all the draw effects. You have the Tirados. Like, there's Cronus. So many things. Yes, Cronus. It's just dominating. And then even Dark Tidings, the Forgotten set, people still love the Logos that was in there.
Like, it's the
Logos
best was house in that set by far.
Yeah. And then suddenly they go, let's remove Logos. So, Sydney, what has life without Logos been like for you? Because it completely changed the game, in my opinion.
You know what? I couldn't agree more. I honestly think there was so much efficiency in Logos that one of the first things you look for in a deck without Logos, and especially like when WoW came out, people were wondering, would these be fast enough? Would these be able to get to the win con fast enough to compete with sets that have been out for a while that have the ability to archive cards, draw cards, search for cards? And I think that the fact that it's a harder look now into a deck also brings a little bit of skill with it, because I mean, you look at a Grim Reminders deck, and if it has Geistoid in it, then you're like, well, that's where my efficiency is. And if you look at a set that has Logos in it and you see a deck with Logos, you're like, well, that's where my efficiency is coming from. But for Winds of Exchange and some of the sets coming up, the idea that Logos will be in some and not in others is really hard to know where to get the efficiency from.
Yes, and I think it was interesting that the two sets that have not had Logos have been both Grim Reminders and Winds of Exchange, which have had other strong themes, which are cycling your deck. You're not getting the efficiency in the same way where you have access, but the efficiency in terms of moving through your deck is actually faster than when we had Logos, because tokenizing and discarding have actually made it, like, it's completely changed the way you think about efficiency and the game of Keyforge, really, at the end of the day. The token, like, I took a step away from tokens, and then I'm I've come back to it, and tokens are fun. Like I honestly love my name deck. I forgot how good it is. And it is just an absolute gem to play. Like it's not, doesn't have a high SAS, but it does things. And I'm really grateful I chose it in my ABR for adaptive. I literally put it in because I was like, I want to play this deck and I don't know if it fits anywhere else. And so I just played it and it was so much fun. And tokenizing and the concept of making tokens is, it's really neat. It's a cool mechanic and it provides a cool play experience. And even though we didn't have Logos, we got to have this and learn how to play Keyforge in a way that is different from what we relied on for so long. And I think that's what's the most interesting thing about it, was we relied on what Logos did for so long. And now we were forced to go about it a different way.
And now that it's coming back and also combining with some of the houses that we've previously seen in sets without Logos, I wonder if the efficiency will just be through the roof, because Logos, like the card, like Articulated Wren, is bringing with it efficiency that we know and love from Logos. So these decks are just going to be the fastest and the quickest and also the probably easiest to manipulate the cards. Like it's going to be super interesting to see whether Geistoid or Logos duke it out for which house has the most efficiency.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the extent Haunted will be leaned into and the discard, and how that will continue on as sets go on, because obviously in Grim Reminders it's going to be a really strong theme. I'm just curious how it goes on, and I'm you know what I'm also curious about is, will we get to a point where these things all come together? So you have them, but they're not all the time. Like for example, like maybe a token exists, but not every deck has a token. Ooh. Like there's certain things that will pull in, you get a token, and maybe there's only like two tokens type of thing. And so it's like a variety. So you could get a token deck, you may not. And so you have a set that has an amalgamation of, there's more Haunted in some, and there's some in it, like, you know, things like that pulls it in. I think that would be really interesting.
Yeah, next Menagerie idea. They went from Unchained to Menagerie. And next idea is like to bring back the individual mechanics from sets that were like unique to those sets, you know, like the Tide from Dark Tidings, or like the Gigantics in Mass Mutation, and just putting them all together, like having all of the sets have all of their crazy mechanics mixed together.
I think that should be the 10th set of Keyforge. When we hit set 10,
yes,
it's everything that came before all thrown into one.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Legend of the Crucible or something.
Fantastic.
Legends of the Crucible. Yeah, that's what I think they should have. Are you listening, Gigi? I gave you your set 10 right there. Because what set are we approaching now? So let's have a little talk about the sets coming up. So more Mass Mutation, I think, is a really eloquent way of reprinting in a thoughtful way that is exciting and giving access. I think that was a really great idea. I don't think it's something that can be done over and over, but I would love to see them maybe do that with Dark Tidings. Refine Dark Tidings and release Darker Tidings. As a dark and then in brackets, Tidings. That's how they should do it. I would love to see them actually spend some time with Dark Tidings and take it to that next level, maybe adding something in there that would do it, like maybe really getting the Tide and everything welcoming, coming together in such a way that people want. But like I said, we've had a few sets now. So we had Amber Skies, which is the official set. And then Tokens of Change is considered not an official set, but right. It's a set. You know what I mean? But it's legal. You can still use it in every way. It will be in the wild, like, and it'll be at Vault Tours. So I'm curious, don't you just consider that the ninth set? Is it ninth? Is that right?
Right.
My set count right? I feel like it's off.
They're Coda, AOA, Worlds Collide, Mass Mutation,
Dark Tidings,
Winds of Exchange, Grim Reminders, then Tokens of Change, and Mass.
Well, Mass doesn't count because that's technically a reprint. But you know what I think that is in Magic?
It's legal. So I guess Vault Masters doesn't count, then Mass Mutation doesn't count because it's limited release in specific ways. Whereas
what it feels like is in Magic they had Masters, and then they have Masters. They just have these Master sets, which are considered like reprinting old cards that you can't get anymore type of thing. It feels like that in a way, and it's more exclusive. It costs a little bit more. It feels like that. But Tokens of Change is now set number 9, technically.
Yeah, because it will be in retail release later this year. So it's something that like will be widely available. And I honestly think it's an interesting way to put to like to rewind to previous sets and make one of the rewinds, like Tokens of Change, a mass release, a retail set. But the other one, which MMM is going to just be four stores that have backed the GamePound campaign and get those decks. So it'll be interesting. They've just like opened the door wide open to different ways that different sets are going to be released. And we'll see if they're going to keep throwing sets at us or if this was like a one-time special, like very fantastic, here's some really cool things. And then they go back to just their cadence of every 6 months.
I mean, I like it because we didn't get tokens of all the houses, and this is allowing us to have tokens of all the houses, which I think I'm most excited for, to be honest, Logos and Untamed, seeing what them having a token looks like, especially mm-hmm. Untamed, I gotta say, because you know it's going to be some creature or witch or something like that. That'll be, oh, it's going to be good. Like, I'm so excited, and I don't want to see any spoilers. I want to experience that set just for, like, the pure, like, discovery. There we go. I think I've said it yes. 4 times this episode. We should get a ticker on the side there.
Amazing.
I'm also wondering if there's a side part to this, which is I wonder if they're testing is what is the reception of releasing more sets? Like, are people receptive to wanting to spend money on this? Because they probably know their cost of creating a set and then seeing what is the return? Can we release more sets so there's more excitement towards Keyforge? And I have to say, I'm not opposed to that because, and I feel like we're going to have an episode on this. So this is a little teaser for a future episode is, I'm kind of getting bored of Grim Reminders already. Hot take.
Yeah. Right.
And not because it's not great. It's actually because I feel like the way you go with Grim Reminders is there's a lot of diversity in the set, but I think what you need to play to stay relevant with the set is a much smaller subsection of the set.
I couldn't agree more, especially having gone through ABR so far this season and having played in so many different formats that either required GR or could be GR, there has been a lot of the same thing coming up. Mm-hmm. And being mm-hmm. on a team of 10 where our available decks only include like 3 or 4 really powerful like Winds of Death K abduction decks. And so like people are asking around like who can have which one. And you mm-hmm. know, it's kind of hard to be unique in Grim Reminders if you're at the top, unless yeah. you specifically have a what June would call like a god deck or have god hands to open a deck like Bandola, you know? So the actual deck variety is fantastic. I like Grim Reminders and Sealed. Sealed Grim yes. Reminders has been my absolute favorite way to play it so far. And I've done it now at not only a vault, but also our Sealed locals. Like, we've just been playing Sealed Grim Reminders. We just show up, buy a couple decks, open them up, see which ones we want, and then play them.
I just like single deck Grim Reminders, honestly. It really harkened back to those old days of Keyforge. Like, Woe, single deck Woe was like that as an alliance format was great. Grim Reminders, though, like just cracking one and playing it is honestly, it's a true Keyforge experience. It really has all those things you want from just luck of the draw and going for it. Like you have such a good chance of having something good. And if it's not good, it still has a competitive edge to it in some way. Maybe all three aren't great, but you can find the moments that exist within other houses that you can really take advantage of and edge out wins. Like your skill level can really be tested in a great way, aside from putting something together, which is, I would agree with you, my favorite thing about Grim Reminders.
Totally. And I think one of the reasons that we buy a couple decks to pick from, not only to support the store, but also because we've had the issue where if we all get one and only one or two of us gets Geistoid in those decks, that those people like are almost guaranteed to win. So I don't know whether
that is, hey?
Right? And so I don't know if it's skill level or luck, but the fact that now you can choose to play the deck that doesn't have Geistoid in it, but you have more than one option. So you can use your skill level there too to pick the better deck.
Do you play traditional Sealed or do you do it in Alliance format?
Oh, nope, traditional. I don't even crack open. So I pick the one that I pick based on the Archon list and I don't even crack open the other one because I don't bring team bags with me. So it's coming home with me in the plastic.
Okay, fair. Awesome. I love that. So I think that does it for our discussion this week. We went past the spoilers just to talk about what life has been like sans logos and with a new set, which was a fun little discussion. I'm glad we got to have that impromptu. But we, of course, cannot end an episode without our titular segments, which we call
Help from Future Self.
And Sydney, I know you have a great Help from Future Self this week. So why don't you take it away?
All right. Well, I have to first and foremost start out with a shout out to Julie July for being an amazing, fantastic KeyForge player, an incredible competitor, but also a keystone of the community and has a heart of gold. Julie, you are amazing and thank you and I love you. And here's the story for everyone else. So I was Julie's opponent this week in Triad. So we set a time where we're early birds. So we actually did it during the day on Tuesday. So we were like straight out of the gate. Let's get this over with. Both of us chatting beforehand about like, this is one of our most nervous formats and was hard for us to like get our decks together. And now that we're ready to play, like the nerves are high. So we start our game and we're a little more than halfway through and she's kicking my butt. Like this game is definitely in a single direction. And I get a call that my kid is not doing so hot at school. So I type in the chat and there's spectators. This is like, I am telling not only Julie, but at this point I'm telling like four other people that I am so sorry. I apologize. I know this is not what either of us wanted, but I have to leave now. And so I conceded immediately. Like, didn't even think about it. No questions. I wasn't going to try and have her redo the game. She was winning. We were more than halfway through. And I conceded because I feel like I had to take ownership of the fact that I was ending this. And I left. I got my kid, brought him home, had him go to sleep upstairs. And then I reached out to Julie. And I was talking with her and I said, I'm ready to play the rest of our match if you want. I do honestly feel like I could concede this match to you because I know we were both nervous and everything was not the way that we wanted it to go. And I messed us up. Like this is my fault. And she was like, don't worry about it, girl. Let's play these games. Like we had one game in the rules, the next two games can be played as they are supposed to be played. So there's nothing stopping us from doing that. But one thing she said that like warmed my heart and one of the things that I will love her for forever is she asked if, because the first one, she put a timer and you're supposed to put a timer, everybody. You're supposed to put a timer for ABR, just saying. She asked if I would prefer we didn't play with a timer in case my kid came downstairs and like needed something or had an issue again. And that was the nicest thing that anyone could possibly say to me. And it's so small and silly. And like, do I not want to put a timer so that like, if I need to pause the game, we can mark the time and then come back and play. And I said, thank you. Yes, that would be amazing. And then we played our next two games, lots of spectators to go. And it was an amazing two games. And I had a blast. We had a fantastic triad, but I feel like I wanted my Help from Future Self is I guess twofold this week. The first is, be like Julie, like be considerate and nice. And she was just, I could not have asked for a better opponent this week. But also in the case of, I was ready to own up to the fact that I messed us up. I was ready to take responsibility for the fact that I was interceding into our triad and some unknown event that couldn't be avoided. So I was ready to concede not only the game, but also the match. So on both ends, be a good competitor like Julie and be willing to own up to your responsibility of whatever it is that you cause the game state to be in when something happens to you. So that is my twofold Help from Future Self this week.
Amen. Well said, Sydney.
All right. Well, after all that, we are on Discord and Patreon. Links are in the show notes. You can find me on Discord and TCO as SC Steel. Blake, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Discord and on TCO as Boulevard Blake. I generally just create random games. So you can find me in the wild, essentially. And if you see me, please say hi. If you listen to the podcast, please tell me. I love having listeners let me know that they listen to the show. It's always makes the game a little bit more enjoyable. And I realize I have to be on my best behavior. So it keeps me
I love it. I couldn't agree more. I'm the same way. Whenever somebody comes in the chat and says, I like your show, I'm like, oh my God, you're amazing and fantastic. And now I need to like not make any mistakes. And now I need to be perfect and amazing. And oh my gosh. But I love it. Love it. Continue to do it. But we will be back next week with another episode of Help from Future Self. Until then, stay forging.